Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. Hey guys, welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. Today we have a power dynamic couple with us. We have RV and Dave. They're in Nashville, Tennessee. They run Ace Homes, and I've just been informed that they are known as the money-making duo. So today we're going to talk about how to make money in real estate. Guys, thanks so much for being on the show with us.
Thanks for having us. We're excited.
Yes, same here. So let's just jump in, man. We always like to start with the why. I know it gets a little deep right off the bat, but we're going to go there. What's the why that got you guys motivated to take the jump into real estate?
I guess I'll start first. So we were both in college at the time. I had just graduated and kind of doing my master's degree. I was applying to, I don't even remember how many job positions, just finding something, you know, in the business field, like marketing or something like that, because that's what I like doing.
Okay.
And I didn't get any callbacks. So I started doubting myself. You know, all these years in college, I'm like, I don't have the experience. I don't have anything. So then I jumped on a call with my dad, and he's the one that actually gave me the idea. And he's like, well, have you thought about, you know, like real estate? And I was like, what is there to do in real estate for me? And he said, well, I've been hearing from some friends, you know, that you can buy houses, fix them up and flip them. He's like, you know, the HGTV shows. And I'm like, okay, you know, I can see. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that. I don't have money. Like, where do you even start?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I don't know. That's your job to figure out. And I'm like, so I was like, all right. So that kind of like sparked a little interest in me. And then randomly in the car, I never listened to the radio, but I guess my Bluetooth wasn't working. And this ad jumped up about, for like a free real estate class.
Yeah.
Real estate investing. And I was like, what the hell? Like, so. Like,
yeah. You know, so random. Couple things in a row. That's all you need.
So I was like, okay, free. I don't have money to pay for it anyway. So I'm going to just go. I went there and it was like, you know, a 2-hour class where they obviously upsell you to like a 3-day seminar.
Yeah.
And I was so convinced that I just ended up buying it. It was like, I don't know, $3.99 or something. Broke in
college. They said, what did you do? Yeah. What just happened?
Now we can't eat.
Yeah, at the time I was making $600 a month,
and oh,
this
wow.
was $400. So I went to my little apartment and I was like, "Hey, you know, I bought this little course." And he's like, "Well, how much did you spend?" And I was like, "You know, just like $400."
Just like, just like.
What is wrong with you? But it ended up being like the best decision ever, obviously. So that's kind of where things got started for me.
Nice.
Dave at the time was still in college, he was in the sports field.
Yeah, so I was in the sports field. I was played basketball in college.
Nice.
Right after college, I had the opportunity to go and coach at a really good prep school down in Florida.
Okay.
And I loved it. I love coaching till this day. But soon I started realizing I always had this vision, this goal, because I'm international, and I always wanted to have that vision. I wanted to take care of my parents because
yeah.
they took care of me. And all that, and working in athletics and figuring out, like, hey, like, there's not that much money you
yeah.
can make compared to, like, actually enough to support your family like that. Mm-hmm. And I started realizing, like, this might not be it. It's definitely a passion that will always be there for me. But then she kind of pulled me in into real estate because our first deal was a couple of flips, and she was kind of struggling to find the contractors and all that. And she asked me, like, hey, come up for 2 months. It was my break. I came up for 2 months, and I saw the vision. I saw what we can actually do.
Yeah.
And I took over from there. That kind of got me into real estate.
That's awesome.
I like that, man. I like your why, because I think that if all you're doing is chasing, like, money, or you just want to drive a nice car, like, live in a big house, it's really hard to keep going when things get tough.
Yeah.
But you have a really deep why. You're like, no, I'm going to find a way to take care of my parents, and I'm going to give back to them for everything they've given to me.
Yeah.
And, dude, it's really hard to quit when that's your motivation.
You have no choice, right? Like, one of my whys is, like, I got to support my mom. I want to bring up my brother. I want to bring up all four of my other siblings, my grand. Like, I got to make, like, the income of 12 people just to do that basic thing for people. So, like, you have to go and do something outside of just a normal job. All right, so let's dial back. So we went from a 3-day seminar to we got two flips going on, and Dave is being pulled back on his 2-month vacation or break from school. How'd you get the flips? What'd you do after the seminar? What'd you find the value? Maybe that actually be good to share for the listeners. What'd you find in value at that seminar? And then kind of what practical steps did you take from there to actually acquire that first property?
Yeah, absolutely. So back to the 3-day seminar. I mean, of course they shared a lot of valuable information, but it was just kind of like the tip of the iceberg in real estate. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much that you still need to learn. And of course, you know, there you're upselling, or they're upselling you to like a $30,000, one-on-one thing, which at the time I was like, whoa, that's insane. Like, that's my college degree. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even, obviously couldn't even afford it or anything, but from there, I just went home and I was like, okay, YouTube, anything that I could learn and find for free. So that's literally what I did for like 8 to 9 months. I was just kind of finding every video that was out there for real estate investing. Yeah. I bought some books for real estate investing. I was reading, you know, taking notes and everything. And then it was like, you know what? I just felt like I was so powerful with knowledge. And I was like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
So I started kind of networking with some agents in the area. At the time, we're actually living in Buffalo, New York.
Okay.
So I started networking with some agents, found some like local real estate groups, and I went there, you know, just to meet some people and kind of see how things were going. And that was back then where you could still find deals on the MLS. Yeah. So I was like searching the MLS with my agent, and I found this house for like $39,000 because the price point in Buffalo is like way lower.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you know what? This is it for me. I'll buy it.
But I think the lesson she learned from this is, first off, don't buy a house that has two major foundation wall issues.
Yeah.
Second issue was, we bought this house in the wintertime. Like, it was cold. So no contractors want to be working outside. They don't want to be working in the house with no AC.
Yeah.
You don't want the AC in the winter. That's okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you've never heard of Buffalo, it's literally, we share a border with like Niagara Falls in Canada. So it's 9 months out of the year. Jeez. It's like freezing cold.
I've seen some videos.
You know, all these, exactly. Yeah. So
looks wild.
She called me up and said, that's when he came. The house. We have an issue though. It said something about the foundation walls need to be fixed. I'm like, foundation walls sounds expensive, Harvey. Like, no, it's just,
that's fine.
Just bring your winter coat with you.
We had to end up like replacing two walls, and it was a basement, so it was about, the ceiling was like a 10 feet.
Oh, wow.
Ceiling with like 30 feet of what it was.
Wow.
So we got into real estate not the easy way.
Yeah, you were thrown in. So real quick before we move on, RV, I didn't know I could just watch YouTube videos, so I definitely got suckered into spending $30,000 in the back of that same room with Fortune Builders. So it's okay, but it kind of worked out for me. But if I would have known YouTube videos was an option, that'd be great too. So let's talk about, how did you get your money? Because we got two college students here. So how'd you line up the funds for that first flip?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, I was going to some networking events, like local in the area, and I was able to find these like two private money lenders that they didn't want to lend me all the money like from one person. So they were like, okay, we'll go in, the both of us, and kind of help you, you know, do that. I was very enthusiastic. I wrote this like little packet of kind of credibility packet of about me, you know, where I'm planning to go, what I want to do, and all that stuff. So they're just kind of like, okay, I believe in you. You know, you seem like you're a get-goer, and, you know, I'm just going to put my faith. And obviously they were pretty strict. Like, they were kind of along with me every step of the way, especially, I mean, it was my first flip. So, but I mean, I ended up doing good for them too. So
One of the things I just noticed there, and I think that this is just like a repeating pattern for you, as I've learned your story and been following you guys and we become friends, is it's like, one, you have like really awesome high levels of confidence. Like, you, everything you talk about, you sell me on. I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I'd follow that. I'd do that too. And then, but then, when you talk about that, like, you hadn't done a flip, but it was like the golden rule of like, opportunity meets you prepared for that opportunity, right? So like, I'm a firm believer that like, people are given opportunity. Everybody's given different opportunities in life, but rarely are they prepared to accept and take advantage of that opportunity. You created a packet.
Yeah.
You prepared yourself for this, right? Like, you went to those meetings intentionally. You took action. You said, hey, I may not have ever done this, but here's my plan. Here's what it looks like. Would you invest in me? And of course, like, that's way better than anyone else that goes, oh, I haven't done a flip yet, but I want to. Would you give me money?
Yeah.
No.
Because 90% of people in that room who are just getting started in real estate are never going to get started in real estate because they're going with nothing in hand or hat in hand, I guess, saying, hey, who's got a deal? Somebody give me a deal. By the way, I need money. By the way, you got a contract? Yeah. Like, people don't show up prepared. So just showing up prepared allowed you to do that. So, all right.
And
so,
I got to say, when I was going to those like first meetings in the beginning, I got a little bit scared because there's people there that I was meeting. They're like, yeah, I haven't started yet. And I was like, you know, how long have you been trying to get started? And they're like, you know, for about 2 years now. And I'm like, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, go and do something. Yeah. There's a lot. I actually think it's fascinating about the real estate is there's so many tire kickers.
Yeah, I remember when I first got started, I did the same thing. I started going to real estate meetups. And so I started going to real estate meetups in Yakima, Washington. That's where I started my wholesaling career. And going to those meetups, there were people that had gone to those meetups for 2+ years that had never done a deal. And I thought it was insane. I'm like, what are you waiting for? Like, what is stopping you from going out and getting something done? And it's because the only action they ever took was going to the real estate meetup.
Yeah.
After that, they didn't do anything all week.
Yep. All right, so now we're in a house. Basement walls are falling in on us. You got to replace them. What, you guys make money on the deal, you lose money, you break even. How things end up going for you?
I would say we barely broke even on that one, and we were so happy to just kind of be done and move forward. And then just kind of from there, we found the next house kind of like right away, again, through the MLS with my agent. Kind of similar, not no foundation, like, problems this time.
So the next one was easy. Check the foundation.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? If I can do that, now I felt like I could do everything.
Yeah.
So this one, I would say the houses we got were still like pretty intensive renovations. So we had to do pretty much from everything, you know, got it to the wall, to the studs and do all the drywalls and stuff like that. And we ended up doing a lot of work ourselves. Yeah. To, I mean, I was just having terrible luck with contractors, and that's when I needed Dave's help with. So when he came in, I was like, no, let's just try to figure out how this whole process works first before we even try to hire these people, because they keep lying to us. And
yeah,
that sucks.
You know, it was just like
the mistakes we made on that house. So that's, I think, the point that we kind of asking, how do we grow from this one?
Yeah.
We got a second house. We did the rehab, a lot of things ourselves. Mm-hmm. I have no construction experience.
Yeah.
So it was back to YouTube.
YouTube, yep. I'm there with you on that one.
But we missed a lot of steps. Like, for example, we closed up the walls without having a final inspection for the electric. So we had to open up the walls again.
Nice.
And all of that stuff. But from that point on, I would say now confidently, I know from A to Z, like, how to remodel a house.
Yeah.
Like, if something doesn't look right, I know exactly, like, hey, that needs to be fixed for sure. Yep. From that point on, I think we start realizing that working ourselves in the flips is not scalable, because we had this vision of putting actual company together, not just doing this like one or two houses. Like, we wanted to actually have a company with employees and stuff like that. So we start realizing, like, hey, us doing the work ourselves with this house is fine. We know the process now, but we need to scale and start subbing out stuff.
Yeah. I think what you just said is really important. That it wasn't the plan, it wasn't scalable, but now you know the process. I find that so many people, because this is like the new, and maybe it's not new, maybe it's just because we're walking out the scalability steps right now. So many people in the scale stage, they just want to like scale immediately. And it's like, okay, well, do you know the process? And maybe it doesn't mean that you have to go and swing the hammer, paint the walls, or whatever you want to call it, but you at least have to know the process. You have to spend time studying, or you have to have a partner who does. Noah can't swing a hammer to save his life just to put him on blast real quick.
Hey, I could build dog ramps, bro.
No, I seen your dog ramps, my man. I ain't walking on that thing. So my first flip, I didn't break even. I lost money, but I had a contractor still like $15,000, and there was no money left to pay for the renovation. So Jeff and my brother-in-law, Seth, started watching YouTube videos, and we went and we did everything, and we decided, oh, you know what? The comp show, if we do a 700 square foot addition, we can actually make money. So our first project, we did a 700 square foot addition, all new trusses on the entire house, new like bro, we spent like $150,000 in that house. I can remodel a house with my eyes closed now because I did it. I learned the process. And then I did construction for a couple of years after that. But now by having that process figured out, I can scale that portion of the business. Our operation side is simple. It's easy. We buy a house, we know our steps, it's processed out. So for people who are thinking about scaling, it's important. And whether, like I said, you don't have to have done that. That's how I did it. That's how you guys did it. But partner up with somebody who knows that process, or find out how to know that, like study that process if you haven't actually done. I think that's key. So I always like to hammer down on that when somebody just casually drops a little gold nugget on the floor. Like, yeah, I'm gonna pick that up and expose it real quick. So you did some flips, you made some money. Where are you at now? What are you guys doing? Because I've Noah's shown me a little bit of you guys' stuff, and I'm blown away by some of the marketing stuff you guys do, and your social media presence is doing really well. So talk about vision, where you at, what you're doing, and how'd you kind of make that big jump? Because obviously you went from two flips to now kind of volume flippers. So,
right. So after the second flip, we bought another house where we're kind of house hacking. And as soon as we were done renovating that one, I came on a trip to Nashville. It was my brother's birthday. So I was like, you know, I'm going to surprise him on a little trip. And
birthday trip.
I really was.
Her brother's not a country fan, but she comes to Nashville for a birthday.
Well, trip. I had heard good things about him, so I was like, you know what? Perfect opportunity to use his birthday.
There you go.
So I came here, and my doubts were right. It was a great place to do real estate. Mm-hmm. Everything was, you know, developing new buildings everywhere. So I was like, okay, this is it. Like, yeah. Really nothing was holding us back in Buffalo. And at this time, it's not like we had really set up a foundation with the business. It was just kind of like us two doing one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I called him up and I was like, hey, we're moving, and I know you don't like it, but
I'm
really set on my decision. So we thought about that for a couple months.
Yeah, and then she just bought a house.
Yeah.
RV's like the business tycoon. Okay, wait. There's one part of the story that I got to understand. So you were in Florida coaching, right, Dave?
At that point, I quit my job, and then I moved to Buffalo to be her full-time contract. But
you guys were dating before, right?
Yes.
You guys were doing like long-distance dating?
Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Arvy, I feel like you got him to come there because you're like, hey, you got work to do.
Yeah.
Come on down.
Yeah. Well,
but everything was a business decision, which is what cracks me. And then you're just like, you're so like business driven. So it's just funny to hear like the background to some of the stuff that I didn't know about.
So honestly, like I never went like up front to him and be like, hey, I need you. Like, I really want you to come here. Mm-hmm. I was just kind of like telling him my problems and be like, it'd be great to have like somebody just manage my construction site. And he'd be like, yeah, the first couple of times. He's like, would you want me to try it? You know, and I was like, well, why don't you come for a couple of months?
There you go.
So. You made him feel like it was his idea.
She slow played it.
It was a business decision all along, for sure.
I love it. So when did the move to Nashville happen? How many years ago was this?
So that was we moved here literally January, like, 1st or 2nd of 2020.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yes, it was, like, about a year ago.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, from there, when we moved here, we bought another house that we're kind of like house hacking and Airbnb at the same time. And at that point, I was like, okay, I need to figure out steps and, you know, the actual process to start getting houses in volume and not just like flip, but we also need to build our own capital, you know, to wholesale and do that. So that's when we started doing our own marketing and kind of going full on, you know, real estate and just, you know, actually have a CRM, like a process to call these people, you know, actually following up with them. And we were calling, like hand dialing ourselves too.
What we did was all the money we were made so far, because we house hacked the year before that, we basically put that in and we said, we're going all in on real estate.
We
didn't have a full-time job. This was the only thing that was supporting us. And we went all in to marketing, to buying a CRM. And we started with direct mail with marketing as well. So it's not the cheapest one that we found.
Yeah.
So we started with that point and we started scaling. We started realizing that this is the only way to get projects in volume, but also projects that actually have some meat on the bones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Actually, profit that we can make off these, because the houses we flipped in Buffalo, we got off the MLS, we made, I think, 5K, 10K on the second flip.
Mm-hmm.
The house hack, was third house hack was going well, but we didn't make like a lot of money. So we figured like there must be a way.
Yeah.
People get millionaires of real estate, but I don't think
they're
is
not
the way.
Getting it from the MLS.
Not 10K at a time on MLS, huh?
I agree completely.
Right.
What was your guys' first hire? Like, who was the first employee that you brought into the company and what did they do for you?
So the first thing, like, besides us two, was like a virtual assistant that was kind of helping me with just kind of like pulling lists of county records and just like all this little stuff that was taking time away from me being on actual phone calls and, you know, trying to close deals. And then from there, my second hire, I guess you can call that, was like an in-person here, like in the States.
Mm-hmm.
was kind of like our closer, I would say, yeah. our acquisition manager, to where it was helping me or us like close deals and go from there.
Nice.
Yeah, at this point, we were struggling. The first 2 to 3 months, we were struggling. I had to put my handyman boots on, and I became a handyman, and I was working like 7, 8, 10 hours a day just to bring money in because we didn't have anything coming in at a
point.
And for some reason, I forgot that I have coaching experience, and she's the one that was in charge of hiring and training. And after a while, it didn't really work out with him because he felt that presence of like, this is not really working out. I started realizing that, Dave, like, why are you not doing this? Like, you're the one that has the coaching experience. Because then I started realizing, like, it's sales.
Yeah.
It all comes out to sales and you need to perform. And if you need to perform, you need to have somebody to coach you, to guide you through it. So
that's when we kind of switched roles, and I went from sales to like marketing and business operations, and he went, you know, from that to just coaching people and like sales and, you know, bringing our team along basically.
Who manages the rehabs now and like the flips?
It was still me. Yeah. It's me. Now I actually have a project manager.
Okay. Nice.
That manages that for us.
And then you guys are doing like 40-ish flips a year right now, right? Or more?
A little bit less than that as of now, but okay. Yes.
Yeah. And then how many rentals do you have now?
We have six so far.
Six?
We're looking to raise that number up. We actually have 3 under contract right now that we're going to keep as rentals.
Nice.
So just looking to up that number as well.
Yeah.
And are you guys doing wholesales as well? Or do you just all the ones you get off, you keep for rehabs?
No, absolutely. Wholesales too. It's like a whole mixture. Our main thing I would say is flipping. And then we have, you know, wholesales for like some quick income. And then again, we're trying to just build up our rental portfolio as well. So trying to get more rentals now.
One of the hard things that is difficult even for our acquisitions team now to separate out is like the wholesaling versus we just want to take down everything. If there's extra meat on the bone to wholesale it, I'm like, nah, we'll just flip it. Like, we can hold it for an extra month and we'll just flip it, right? So how do you guys separate out whether something's going to be a wholesale or a flip?
That's actually a really good question because I'm the same. I'm like, but we make, you know, 40 and just, like you said, keep it an extra month instead of 10. So, honestly, it's hard.
We learned our lesson, I would say, because at one point in time, we had, I think, 4 or 5 flips going on at the same time. And we weren't wholesaling anything at the time. And the well was running dry a little bit. And there's a lot of money stuck in the flip. And we start realizing like, hey, like we can't really do it. Like, we need to like a mixture of like wholesaling and flips to keep a nice balance. And because in 1 month, you can have 0 income if you're flipping. But the next 100%. Month, you can have 150,000.
We had this little phase where we took on probably more development deals than we should have at the time, or like long term flips. They're like, hey, 3 months to get the tenant out, 3 months for permits, 6 months for flips.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're like, bro, where's all the revenue at? Like, what? Like, our operations we got 30 deals going on. We're like, what's going on? We're like, oh yeah, we bought a bunch of deals that will literally make us $0 and actually cost us a ton of money for 18 months. So we're like, all right, let's get some quick flips in here. Luckily, we have the marketing system going on. So it's like, all right, now we want some quick flips. Let's go and target those. So it works, but we still definitely are like, for me, like it's not that I'm not a fan of wholesaling, but I just know how easy it is to flip a house now that I'm like, ooh, why would I wholesale that? But there has been a point where in that development phase, we hit like 2 or 3 wholesales real quick because we're like, hey, let's get some money in and we need it in 2 weeks. So here we go.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It could be a very cash like intensive business, right?
It is.
Like you 1 month you can have like 6 figures in your bank account. You're like, whoa, this is cool. Let's take it easy. And then all of a sudden you buy like 2 more projects and you decide that you're going to do the down payments on those and your 6 figures is gone.
And we've definitely been there, so we know the struggle.
Yeah,
it goes. It's an in and out business, that's for sure.
I call it, my joke sometimes, like, how can you be rich and poor at the same time?
When I first started flipping, I had a mentor that said, hey, bro, just to let you know, there's 2 options here. You can be cash rich or you can be property rich, which means you're cash poor. Like, those are the 2 options. You want a ton of cash? Cool. It's going to sit in your account till the tax man takes half of it. But sure, you're going to feel a little bit of comfort. Or you can live off of very modest means and you can actually build real net worth and have property rich and have property values that increase. Yeah. And I was like, that sounds cool, but I also really like money. So how do we get to that? Where's the middle ground at, bro? And we're still trying to find it. But let's jump in because you guys said 6 rentals. I love that because we're talking, you guys moved to Nashville, what, a year and a half, year and 9 months ago, something like that. And yeah. So you've scaled out a business and in the meantime started holding rentals. Goal was flipping off the back. So what got you guys to then kind of maybe, I don't know if it was part of the vision of, in the beginning or kind of reassess and say, hey, let's start holding some of these. How'd that work out?
Yeah, so we had our first taste, I'd say, with the house. We were house hacking in Buffalo. We didn't want to sell it because it was a duplex, you know, great location. And I was like, yeah. I think that appreciation, you know, is really going to bring us back money, you know, in the future as well. So we decided to rent it. And Buffalo is a great rental market. Like, we cash flow on this thing, like, $1,600 after all expenses are done.
Holy smokes.
That's rad. So it's a great duplex. And we're like, okay, where do we find something like that here in Nashville? So definitely not even close to that amount of cash flow. But we were like, the difference between Buffalo and Nashville is that Nashville, everything appreciates so quickly.
Yeah.
So we decided to buy a house kind of like in the middle of the city where, you know, cash flow is not the best. But, you know, we bought it last year when we started for $160,000, put like $50,000 into it. So we were all in at $260,000. And it just appraised like last 3 months ago when we refinanced it for, you know, $380,000.
Wow.
That's pretty.
Appreciation. It's really insane. So that's where like, okay, we have like a play of both like cash flow and appreciation. So we need to hold and do a mixture of both. So that's kind of like when we started realizing we need to hold some rentals.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I was actually talking to Max, Maxwell.
Oh, yeah.
And he was basically stating like, he kept on saying every time when I met him, he kept on stating like over and over, I wish I had more rental. I wish I kept more when I got started. And in my ears, I'm like, okay, if he's saying he kept more when he got started, I'm just getting started. So I need to keep more.
Yeah.
And he kind of explained his theory of when he went, that was like 2 years ago, that when he bought 10, he kept 5 and he flipped 5.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an even balance of cash flow coming in and then also some revenue coming in.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at now.
Yeah. I think that's a common thread that you hear from people who have been in real estate a long time. They all will tell you, I wish I would have held more. Every single one. Like, and I think it's a catch 22. Noah and I talk about this all the time. There's an upside and a downside to it. Like, yeah, I bet you wish you would have held everything. But then also, like, for me 3 years ago, if I would have held everything, then I probably would have like 8 rentals right now and nothing else. I sold, I flipped, I made massive amounts of revenue and then used that to scale up a business. And now I'm going to hold a ton of rentals. So the end goal is definitely long-term wealth building through rental properties, right? But I think there's everyone, and in the future, like I'm already looking back at like some of the projects we sold, like, damn, we should have kept that. But it also like, I have to in the back of my head go, okay, but it created revenue that allowed me to bring on people, get an actual office and scale out a company. So there's the give and take to it, but yeah, definitely rentals is the way to go. So that's cool that you got that advice from Max. He's a killer dude, man. That guy's a savage.
For sure.
So what is like your guys's goal for, I mean, I'd love to hear like your 5-year goal, your 1-year goal, like where do you want to take the business from where it's at and where do you want it to be? Like, do you guys want to remove yourself? Do you want to just stack up a ton of rentals? Do you want to grow to doing flips all over the US? Like what's your guys's goals?
Yeah. I don't know about the all over the US part, but we're definitely interested in keeping growing like our flipping and our wholesaling side and just having a sales team with, I don't know, probably 3 to 4 closers or something like that. Because right now we have a closer and like 2 follow-up specialists. So definitely want to remove ourselves from the business as much as we can and kind of just kind of handle like from the top, basically.
Yeah.
And then I would say this is like for the next 1 to 2 years is what our goals are. And then for the 5 years, we're definitely interested in getting into some like multifamily stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where the true financial freedom comes from. And this is just kind of cash to build up to that. So that's where we're at. I think like short term within the next 5 years.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. This year we definitely took a leap because last year we were doing everything ourselves.
Yeah.
And we made some money, but we made money like I would say the hard way.
Yeah.
It was like a hustle. It wasn't a business.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we, for 3 months, I think January, February, March, we barely did any type of marketing because we restructured our whole company to make it scalable, to make everything scalable. And that's kind of what we're very big on where we're talking to people. It's like, we always are looking for ways to scale, to make our company better, to scale it better. Mm-hmm. For example, now
but we have a sustainable way.
Yeah.
Sustainable. I like that.
We're definitely seeing the fruit like of our labor of it's coming together.
Yeah.
Now when I see somebody that comes in and puts application in And I said, all right, I can make it to a closer. Like, I'm confident in saying that I can make it to a closer for sure. Yeah. When she does her marketing, she knows, like, I know this list is going to bring deals. Like, yeah. That confidence, like, as you mentioned before, is always going to be there. Like, sometimes I think a month ago, we did a flip, didn't do too well on it. But heck yeah, we're still going to keep flipping.
Like, yeah. What are some of the things that you guys would say, like some specific items we can give the listeners of what you're doing to make your business scalable? Mm.
So for us, the first thing was having a CRM. And I know we kind of talked a little bit about this before, but it's just so important because everything revolves around that. And if that's not functional, you don't have a way to keep your leads, follow up with them. I mean, it'd be insane to try to remember to follow up with like the amount of leads that we have in.
Yeah.
And the CRM does that for us automatically. So that's like something that it's so well worth the money. I mean, we'd never stop paying for.
Yeah.
The second thing is marketing. I mean, I cannot stress it enough. We talk to people all the time and they're like, well, I did like, oh, direct mail for a month and then I didn't get anything. So direct mail doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work like that. You know, you don't call for a week and it's like, oh, it didn't work. So I'm just going to do something else. And then real estate doesn't work because you did three different types of marketing in 1 month and you didn't become consistent in any of them.
I agree.
So, and people always ask us like, well, what marketing do I do? There's so many types out there. And I'm like, the one you can be consistent with.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks, you know, that they can call or they can do texting, but those types of marketing, they need somebody like in front of the computer to do it for you.
Yeah.
So you have to find something that, you know, works with your time. Like if you work a full-time job, you're not going to be call calling. You're going to want to be doing direct mail.
Yeah.
And, you know, vice versa. If you don't work, then calling might be for you.
Yeah.
So those are like the two main things. And then
the last one is sales. I never, this year I started realizing like, hey, like sales is probably next to marketing, that goes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. If you can do as many as type of marketing as you want, if you can't close a deal, you don't know how to talk to the sellers and know what to ask them. Because you hear a lot of people just stating online, like ask the right question, build rapport. What is the right question? Mm-hmm. Like how do you actually build? Because I believe in build rapport, but you need to build rapport to like with a purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Ask random questions and just be their friend. That's cool and all.
Yeah.
You're not leading towards something. Mm-hmm. So that's why I definitely took the challenge of becoming a closer, confidently calling myself a closer and confidently saying that I can train people, anybody basically to become like, a salesperson.
Yeah.
At least a follow-up specialist.
Dave, I think that is huge because I can even look back like a year ago and what I thought building rapport was a year ago was making sure I knew like their dog's name and the street that their kids lived on and like their favorite restaurant in town. And like, that's what I'd call, you know, my follow-up calls would be like, hey, did you go to your favorite restaurant again? That has no purpose, right? The amount of deals that I closed from those follow-up calls were slim to none.
Yeah.
But doing those follow-up calls with a purpose and being having intent behind it, asking the right questions like, hey, have you thought about where you're moving? Did you find that next place to go? Has your motivation changed? What's your urgency, right? Like doing that and having a point of where you want to end with those follow-up calls or those sellers is how you actually close those deals. So I love that you hit on that because I think that's huge.
I'll tell you a funny story real quick. So last year when we had just kind of started and we were doing, you know, our first marketing, I had this lady and I was like, she was like very sweet old lady, you know, on the phone. And she just kept talking about, you know, her son and her daughter and this. And I'm like, okay, I'm building rapport. This is great.
Right.
So we're talking and she's like, I finally convinced her to go to the house and take a look at her house. While there, she convinced me to go on a lunch date with her. And she took me to this expensive like seafood restaurant and, you know, we're eating and she's like, you know what? I forgot my wallet. I'm so sorry. So I ended up paying for, at the time it was like $75 or something, which was a big deal for us because we barely had money. And then after that, she ghosted me. So,
yeah, got the and free she was lunch. Like, I had no intent of selling my house.
Exactly. So like Dave said, you know, build rapport with a purpose for sure, because we learned our lesson on that.
And I'm assuming now you guys close, you guys will close deals without ever actually going to the property, right? Like you'll put it under contract and then you'll just probably make it like subject to a partner walkthrough, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was like one of the major shifts we did this year, because last year we wasted a lot of time on appointments.
Yep. Yeah. So did we.
That's been our big push. And we still like, there'll be moments where like, they're like, hey, we kind of got this deal. It'll work out. Let's go walk it. And like, it's just like a foot down type of thing. Nope. I'm not entering a house unless I have a contract on it, because there's no point. Like, for me, I'd rather lose that deal and not have that source of revenue and focus on what I need to be focusing on in the business than get distracted by a potential appointment. Like, I don't need it. Let's lock it up. So I gave Noah pushback on that at first, because I did, you know, like the limiting belief thing. Ah, dude, it's not going to work in our market. Not in our market. You know how many times you hear that crap? Like, now that you, like, we're in like these national, like we go to like Tiffany's training and like all these other things and you meet people in different markets. Everyone always has something that doesn't work in their market. And it's just so not true. But for me, I was like, no, Boise people love their families and they are all about their pride. And like, no, it doesn't matter, dude. If somebody is a distressed seller and wants to sell a house, they're going to sell a house. All you got to do is have the right skills and the right script and do your job on the phone and lock that thing up. So it definitely, that was a big shift for us. I think that's been one of the things that helped us to start getting more momentum quickly as far as like off-market acquisitions.
Yeah.
Cool.
That was,
go ahead.
No, I was just that was like our biggest shift. And then the second one I'd say is deciding to split up the role of like one acquisition person doing everything from start to finish to like a follow-upper and an actual closer.
Yeah.
That definitely like were two things that we had to adjust a lot to, but, you know, started paying off really well.
Nice. Before we jump to our final couple of questions, what did you guys notice? Because there's this big shift that happens when you scale. And I think a lot of people who scale don't know that this is a shift that's about to happen. But it no longer becomes important that you're great at your role. It becomes important that you're great at leading people to be good at their role. So what kind of leadership hurdles did you guys face, and how did you overcome that? Maybe some training that you did, or just some recommendations that you would give to people who are now no longer, it doesn't matter if I can flip a house anymore. I need to be able to lead my operations team to flip a house. So what are some tips that you would give the folks who are in that transition ready to scale up?
I'll start with my mistakes first, because I think I made the most when it comes to employees. My biggest misconception was like, great, I got somebody here now. They don't need me anymore. They can do everything on their own. I have to tell them to them once. And, you know, if they don't remember it, then it's a big freaking deal. So for me, that was like the biggest mindset shift, that you don't just tell them once and then, you know, they got it. They're ready to go and close deals. And then I'll let Dave.
The biggest thing for me was realizing and from our experience is that you're going to have some tough months. Like, if you're trying to scale, and like, for example, I put my foot down and I said, I'm not going on these calls anymore, only my acquisition, and the deals weren't coming in anymore. And I'm like, damn, I need to call. But actually, like, having faith and then trusting yourself and the training, it definitely pays off, but it's going to have some stressful moments to it. I can confidently say right now that my closer is better than me at closing.
That's awesome.
Hopefully she doesn't listen to this podcast, because I don't want to tell her that.
I know. I'm like, man, my operations, she's our operations. She's like an assistant who's being trained for operations manager. She's 1,000 times better at operations than I am. Yeah. Don't listen, don't leave, please. But no, I think that's awesome, man. Thanks for sharing. I think one of the like, you can, it's easy to get stuck in this kind of hamster wheel of like, oh, I'm a good flipper, I'm good at wholesaling, I'm good at marketing. And really all you're doing is creating like this job for yourself that you're still obligated to do. If your true intent is to build wealth and to build freedom, then you have to scale a business. And to scale a business, you can't just be good at what you're good at. You have to be good at things that the company needs you to be good at, which is leadership, training, coaching, all these type of things. And so I think it's important for people to know that, yeah, it's hard. Like, I remember like going to the leadership jump, I was like, man, how do I, because like I'm a 27-year-old like hoodlum. Like I grew up in a really weird scenario. I like to function and have fun. It's who I am. I can't do that all the time. It definitely is a big part of our company, but now I have to challenge myself to be a different person and come across as a leader and not just a friend to our entire team. So knowing that there's hurdles ahead and that you guys face hurdles, I think that's encouraging for our listeners to know that as you scale, you'll have hurdles and you'll have to retool and retrain, and you'll even have to retrain yourself as you start to train other people. So thanks for sharing that, guys. I really appreciate that.
Hey, one thing I want to talk about before we go to the last couple of questions is you guys also do a coaching program, right?
Yes. And
tell me the name of it again.
Money Making Business.
And so who would what type of person or what group of people would benefit the most from you guys' coaching program?
Yeah, when we started this, we were kind of thinking about ourselves when we started and all the kind of mistakes that we did and what went wrong.
Yeah.
So for us right now, we're just kind of targeting people that are looking to get serious about real estate. You know, they've kind of did their first flip or their second, you know, where they've had some experience, but they don't know how to scale it. Like, what is the right foundation?
Yeah.
You know, what is the right type of marketing? How to do it right? You know, how to do put those all of those together, you know, including some sales training. And like Dave said, you know, talking to sellers with a purpose and building rapport with a purpose. So that's kind of who we're going after in terms of like, and who would benefit for a program as well.
So anyone that's like maybe done like 1, 2, 3 flips and they're ready to go to like 5 at a time, they're essentially looking
to
scale.
I wouldn't say necessarily like 5 at a time. I would just say like getting serious to make this their full-time, you know, like I wouldn't say job, but like thing. And have an intention to be financially free in the future.
I like that. How can anyone listening to the show that wants to potentially be a part of that, how can they reach out to you regarding that?
We actually have a website, moneymakingduo.com, or also on Instagram at rv.karkanji.
Dave.arlo.
As well, yeah.
Okay, cool. We'll make sure that we get your guys' like Instagram names in the show notes so people can click on it and go right there. So
you guys got like a bunch of swag, like, with that logo on it, because it's a pretty cool logo.
Jeff subtly asked me for like, a free
hey,
shirt.
Yo, send me a hoodie though. I'll take a beanie.
He's been bugging me for that first time.
I love it.
I need hoodies. Like, no. Like, I need hoodies.
We're so big into like the cup, like the shirt, hat. Like it's all, we're all about the swag. Our assistant actually just sent me the link to like the fall line of everything. And I'm like, I'm about to blow so much money on company hoodies, long sleeves. All right, final two questions, guys. Podcasts, books, what got you started? What motivates you to keep going? What do you listen to and what do you read? What would you recommend for other folks?
What do you read, Dave?
What do I read? I'm not a reader.
Me neither. Hey, finally. Bro, I ask this question and every time somebody names like 5 books, I'm like, I don't read, dog.
I do, and I have so much confidence, but the reading, only book I have tried to read, I'm still reading it, is Never Split the Difference.
There you go.
I mark my words, I'm going to read that book twice. I want to read it twice before the year ends.
Okay. I've been hearing that since January.
hey, look, he got 3 more months, 4 more months. You good? You got some time?
Yeah. Hey, you and Jeff have a lot of similarities right there.
I literally, every time somebody comes on the show and they say their book, no one makes fun of me. He thinks I'm lying, but I'm going to send him a picture tonight so he knows it's not. I'm like, I got that on my bedside table.
But he never says that he hasn't read it or touched it since he ordered it. He's always like, no, I have that book. But again, he doesn't say, but I haven't read it.
If I don't have the book and someone recommends it on the show or in person, I buy it. So I have a very good library. Have I read them? No.
He loves to collect them.
Someday I'll get to it, maybe.
Yeah.
What about you, RV? Are you a reader or?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm the biggest reader either, but I like to read books with like a purpose, I'd say, something that gives me like specific steps to do something. Like, for example, in our business this year, a big thing was, you know, our foundation, like scaling and all that stuff. So Traction felt like it was a great book for me to read, and it has actual like actionable steps in it.
Yeah.
So that's the type of books I like to read mostly.
Nice. What about podcasts? You guys podcast fellows or?
Yes and no. We've definitely listened to some of your episodes.
I love it.
I usually have to shameless plug our own podcast. Thank you for doing
y'all
it.
Y'all are like, we're about that business, bro. We just try to, we out here. I like it.
Yeah.
That's killer.
Well, yeah, for sure. And then, I mean, Bigger Pockets is a big one. I did listen to that a lot when I got started. And I would say I listen to podcasts like occasionally. And mostly, well, like maybe when I'm having a bad day, I'm like, okay, let me listen to something that might give me like a good nugget or something to implement.
Cool. Yeah,
for sure.
So you guys already gave us the listeners the tips on how to get a hold of you. We really appreciate you guys coming on. This was a really fun episode.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you guys. Anything else you want to add before we end the show?
Just towards you guys, like keep pushing this, man. Like a lot of people, I would say the younger generation are looking for somebody to relate to, like the younger generation to be on podcasts and to explain your stories. Because we all know these gurus and these older guys that have done it before, but like seeing somebody our age and actually like young and as you said, just a hoodlum, just trying to make it. And definitely keep doing it and keep pushing everybody else for sure.
I love it. We appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.